This is episode 398, dated Monday, July 7th, 2025.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. I am Bob Branco. Glad to be with us today. This is episode 398, dated Monday, July 7th, 2025. We have a slightly different panel today because of the ACB convention. We are missing Peter Altschul, Mitch Pomerantz, and Reverend Michael Garrett. They are all at the convention. We wish them well, and we hope that they come back with us for next week's program. In the meantime, let me introduce the panel that we have at the moment. We are expecting one more later on. We start out with Don Wardlow. Don Wardlow. What happened to Don Wardlow?
Well, all right, we'll get having back. A little computer problem, but you should be hearing me now.
How are you, Don?
All right. Hot in Jersey, as it will be for the rest of the summer.
We're cloudy today, some downpours, a little humid, temperatures in the 80s, typical summer weather, I suppose. We have with us Troy Larson. He's going to be on the panel today. Welcome, hi. Troy.
Hi, guys. How's it going this afternoon?
Fine. Thank you for filling in today. We appreciate it. And I also want to extend thanks to Bobby DeSilva for also filling in today here on Sports Roundtable. Bobby, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing fine. We are expecting a guest on the show today. I don't know if he's going to come in or not. If not, no harm done. He'll be on next week, and that would be Mark Kestacher of ESPN Radio. If he doesn't show, that's understandable. But if he does, we'll welcome him and we'll talk to him. I want to thank those people who make it possible for Sports Roundtable to be aired and to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, who happens to be our facilitator for today's program. Because of the convention, Raymond, thank you for being our facilitator today, and also thank you for producing a quality podcast for us. We appreciate that. Also, our media sources, thank you for airing us when you do. That is much appreciated. And also, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, who archives our programs on my website. In order for people to find those archived programs, they must go to www.brancoevents.com, arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcast, click on them, and you will see most of our archives from latest to earliest. And as Peter Altschul always says, merci, Jackie. Mark Kestacher, are you here yet? Okay, I'm sure that we will be notified if he does come in. Raymond, would you let us know when you see his name? Also, we are expecting Luther King, a regular panelist. He should be here momentarily. We'll see what happens.
Sorry, yes.
Okay, thank you, Ray. There was a 7-team trade. Yes, you heard correctly. 7 teams were involved in a major trade in the NBA. I haven't heard all of the details about that trade, admittedly. I will learn more as time goes by. I understand that Kevin Durant was the main piece in the 7-team trade. Phoenix was involved, the Lakers, Minnesota, Houston. I'm not sure who the other 3 teams were. Perhaps Troy can elaborate for me on that one. Go ahead, Troy.
I'm trying to think here. Portland might have been one of the teams. I don't know. I just don't remember. I looked at it once last night. And, so Minnesota was one of the teams involved. They received a second round pick as well as a player. The player's name is Rocco Sikarski, whom I have no idea who he is. And so I don't know who all the 7 teams were, but there were some second round picks exchanged for a future drafts and as well as some players. So that's the rundown I can give you. And I'm sure if people were to go looking online, they can find out more information on the trade.
Well, I know that Kevin Durant went to Houston.
Yes, Kevin Durant went to Houston.
That ought to be an interesting relationship, Ime Udoka and Kevin Durant.
So speaking of the NBA, I don't know if you've heard, Bob, but Phoenix maybe getting rid of Bradley Beal.
They've been dying to do that for a long time.
Yep, and so it's probably going to be a buyout, and the way it's going to work is they will pay most of the remainder of his salary, which is $110 million, by the way.
Oh, my goodness.
For the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But they're gonna expand it out to 5 years. Cause I guess there's some contract rules in the NBA where you can stretch out a contract to make it fit your salary cap needs. But because of the fact that you can only stretch out 15% of your cap of your salary payroll, he will not be getting all that $110 million, but he will still get most of it, but it will mostly be spread out for 5 years. But here's the thing, Bradley Beal will probably, so if Phoenix buys him out, he would not have to have as big of a contract if he signs with a different team. So I don't know if it's going to be a win-win for Phoenix necessarily, other than the fact that it could create more payroll flexibility. And here's the thing. Phoenix's salary cap is in the second apron, which is the second, I guess, a second level over the luxury tax. If somebody else is on the show, Paku can explain it better than I can. Yeah, they can, but it seems like if they do that second apron, which is how much over the luxury tax threshold it is, then they, for however how many years they do that, going to a second apron, they will eventually lose. Well, actually, they wouldn't lose a first round pick, but that first round pick would be bumped to like the 30th pick. That'll be like for like in 2032 or something like that. So there are some reasons why Phoenix maybe would like to get out under from that Bradley Beal contract.
I think we know definitely.
Troy,
go ahead, Bob.
Troy, it works basically the same way as the MLB luxury tax works. You have three levels, and every time you go over a level, the sanctions are a little more severe. Like for example, in baseball, if you go over the first luxury tax, you really don't get sanctioned very much. If you go over the second luxury tax, you may lose a draft pick. If you go over the third luxury tax, it's 75 cents on the dollar over the luxury tax, and you lose international bonus signings. I'm assuming the NBA works kind of the same way. If you go over the first luxury tax, it's not that big of a deal. If you go over the second apron or over the second luxury tax, you're going to lose draft picks. Like you said, if they have, say they had the 20th pick, it would get bumped down to the 30th pick. And if you go over the third luxury tax, you could lose a first round pick altogether, and you have to pay a tax on every dollar over that final threshold that you went over. That's basically how it works.
That's interesting. I never knew that they did that for MLB. I'm going to have to go look that up.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They do.
I also heard rumblings. I don't know if you've heard about them, Troy, or Don even. I've already talked to Bobby about this off the air. But I understand the Celtics are very interested in Damian Lillard.
Well, Damian Lillard, I know, was bought out by the Milwaukee Bucks, but I have not checked in to see who might be interested in that, wanting to sign him.
I agree with you, Troy. Why would you want him? I mean, Bob, you made a comparison to Jrue Holiday. I think Jrue Holiday this year was more productive than Damian Lillard.
He played injured.
Yeah, he did. He did. Damian Lillard had his heyday with Portland. Wait a minute. Was it Portland?
Yes.
Yes.
He was with. Yes. Yeah, he had his heyday with Portland. He's on the back nine of his career.
Yeah, he's about 37.
Yeah, and he's going to want a decent chunk of change because of his past history. He's got the pedigree, his name. He's going to want a decent chunk of change. And I just don't see Brad Stevens giving him that much money. I just don't see it.
Yeah, well, you know, the Celtics have new ownership now, and I understand they're loaded with money. Which makes me wonder why, in a way, if it's true what I'm hearing about Chisholm and all the money he has, why they want to cut payroll?
Well, they don't want to go over the luxury tax. And, you know, Tatum's going to be out all of next year. You want to replace Tatum, but how are you going to replace Tatum short term? If you replace Tatum with a competent player, you're going to have to replace him long term. And what are you going to do with that player when Tatum comes back?
No, you don't replace him.
That's just it. Yeah, they want to cut payroll. I guess what it is that's just a nice way that I think the media is putting it. It's not so much that they want to cut payroll. They want to get rid of dead weight. They want to get rid of dead money. And you can't blame them for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been an interesting free agents period so far in the NBA, which started last week. But we'll just have to wait and see what progresses between now and the start of the season, which, you know, the way time is going is coming sooner rather than later. That's for sure. Although football training camps will be starting in about 2 or 3 weeks.
Hey, Bob,
the 23rd, I believe. I believe it's the 23rd of July is when football starts. And today is the 7th.
Yep, that's in about 2.5 weeks.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that Don's okay. Yeah. Because I see you muted. Just want to make sure you're doing okay, Don. Not trying to just make sure everything's like, because I thought you were having some issues before. So I want to see if you're doing all right.
You there, Don? Well, Don.
I just thought it was muted, so I just want to make sure.
Okay. You're all right. I often mute on purpose when I have other stuff I need to be doing and we're not talking about.
I just want to make sure you're okay. That's all. I don't have
much to contribute right at the moment.
Yeah. Well, this next subject, maybe later in the program,
I will.
Well, this next subject.
Sorry. Training camp starts in exactly 2.5 weeks on the 23rd. That's 2 weeks from this Thursday. I mean, Yeah, 2 weeks from this Thursday.
Actually, it'll be Wednesday.
Wednesday. It's Wednesday. So, yeah, almost 2.5 weeks. Not quite 2.5 weeks.
Yep.
Almost 2.5 weeks.
Yep.
2 weeks and 2 days.
Yep.
That just goes to show
how fast this year is flying.
I know. It's flying too fast, if you ask me. We were talking before the show about the standings in the baseball, and especially the AL East, and how it's going to be a crapshoot. As it turns out, I mean, right now, yeah, Toronto's hot. The Yankees are slipping a little bit. Tampa's still right there. The Sox are a game over 500. And of course, they were predicted to win the AL East by baseball savant. but that's a
publication I'd never heard of, until this afternoon, but yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, but I agree with you in one thing you said, Bob. It's a crapshoot, all right, with the emphasis on crap, especially my Yankees. My God, we just collapsed is what we've done, you know, to get passed by the Toronto Blue Jays.
I don't know what their problem is. I really don't know, because before the Sox played them, remember that series? We played them 3 games there, and then the following weekend we played them 3 games here.
Yep.
Right before that series, when Boston played them, when they took 2 out of 3 in New York, right before that series, that team, they were on such a hot streak. They were white hot. You couldn't stop them. Judge was unstoppable. The guy was hitting pitches behind him over the fence. I mean, he was just cracking everything. And their pitching before Clark Schmidt got hurt, he couldn't walk somebody if he wanted to. They were unstoppable. And then ever since they got swept in Boston, they just went downhill.
You're not kidding,
man. And Tampa was playing out of its mind, but they're slipping as well because both Tampa and New York are 3.5 behind Toronto. And Boston's only 6.5 behind Toronto.
I think, because I believe the Yankees and Rays are 3 games behind the Blue Jays right now, as we speak.
Yeah, they're 3.
Okay.
Yeah, they're 3. They're 3, not 3.5. They're 3.
Yep.
But at one point, Tampa was only 0.5 a game behind the Blue Jays. And they haven't been playing the greatest lately. I mean, Boston, I don't want to take anything away from Boston, but they haven't exactly been playing the juggernaut of baseball. But this is what you got to do. You got to take advantage of this portion of the schedule. You had 3 with Washington, you got 3 with Colorado, and you got 3, it's either 3 or 4 with Tampa this coming weekend. And then you have the All-Star break, and then after the All-Star break, you got the Cubs. So you got to take advantage of that. And earlier this year, Boston was not.
Well, to Don's point that the American League East is a crapshoot, you know, before the season started, I would have thought Baltimore would have still been a team. I don't know if I would have picked them to win me that division, but I would have thought they would have made some noise in that division. But
so did I.
But as we speak, they are in last place. But let's go back to Tampa Bay. They played the Minnesota Twins at Target Field this past weekend. The Rays lost 2 out of 3. And do you want to know how the Rays lost? Friday night, on the second pitch in Bauman 8th inning, Harrison Bader hits a walk-off home run for the Twins. Saturday night, the Twins beat the Rays of their own game. A bunt down the first baseline by Brooks Lee to win the game for the Twins in the bottom of 9th inning. 2 walk-off wins in a row. And to the Twins' credit, I think they are starting to play more of the small ball, the old-fashioned small ball style.
That's what I think the Red Sox is finally doing. And from what I understand, it's Alex Bregman's idea because, you know, he's been on the sidelines, as we all know. Go ahead, Bobby. You know more about it than me.
It is. It's Alex Bregman who, when Roman Anthony was called up, okay, this front office wanted him to swing for launch angle. They wanted him to hit everything to the moon, pull everything to right field, hit everything to the moon. He was hitting little cha-ching ground balls to short, little ground balls to second, pulling them to first. But now he's going the other way. He's not uppercutting his swing anymore. And this is what has killed the Rays. I'm going to say ever since Eric Meander took over as the GM, this is what's been killing the Rays. I know they made it to the World Series in 2020. But this is what's killing the Rays, and this is what's been killing the Red Sox ever since Ian Bloom took over in 2020. Okay? This advanced metrics baloney, all this science, all this analytics, you're playing the game on the field. You're not playing the game on spreadsheets. Okay? And when you do that, you get away from who you are. You get away from what you can do. Okay? Roman Anthony has got power to all fields. He's a spray hitter. He sprays the ball all over the place. What's the difference if it's a 150-foot high, 510-foot home run, or if it's a 50-foot high, 410-foot home run? It all counts the same. But these front offices, it's all about the look. It looks more appealing when you hit these long, majestic shots. But the problem with swinging for those long, majestic shots is just strike out 11 out of 10 times. But you got some teams like Boston. They are starting to play small ball. They're bunting people. They're moving runners over. Minnesota did that this weekend. Okay? Minnesota beat Tampa Bay at Tampa Bay's game. They beat them at their own game. They didn't beat them. The Minnesota Twins didn't beat Tampa at the Minnesota Twins game. They beat Tampa at their own game. And that's what happens when you interject too much science in something. Okay. Science is a great thing. I know the country, we're all about technology. We're all about science. But science doesn't apply to everything. When you're making a cake, you don't apply science to it. You just follow the directions on the box and you pop the cake in the oven and it comes out. You don't have to be over analytical about it.
Agreed. Nope.
Agreed. Yep. You know, and now you've got starting pitchers being taken out of games way too early because of science. Oh, we don't want them to face batters for the third time. How come that's such a problem nowadays and it never was?
Yeah, well, you know, I want to go back to what Bobby was mentioning, Bill. If anybody can go on to the pitching. So yesterday, Willie Castro, one of the Twins, he's Morick Fair, super utility player. They had a feature on the radio, on the pregame show on the radio broadcast. Well, apparently Castro had a conversation with Dan Gladden, the Twins radio broadcaster. And of course, Gladden is a former player. And Gladden basically encouraged Willie Castro to steal more bases. And he has been stealing more bases lately. And it's like, why is it these coaches that we have are not encouraging more of a small ball? Rocco Baldelli came from an organization that did that type of stuff. You know, there's people that say the Rays were they were the ones who invented the modern analytical.
They invented the opener.
Oh yeah, but like, you know, the modern way of doing the analytics to baseball, you know, yeah, they did invent the opener. But let me point something out to you guys. When they did the opener in 2018, they had four starting pitchers in the rotation. So basically the opener was just like a means to fill that one spot. Otherwise they had four good starting pitchers, and I was going to look up to see who those pitchers all were. I'm assuming that two of them might have been Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow.
Glasnow.
I think Glasnow came in 19.
Maybe came 19. I don't know. Blake Snell was one of the pitchers.
It was Chris Archer. He was in that trade for Glasnow.
Yeah, he went to Pittsburgh in 19. It was in 19.
Yeah, Archer was one of them, Troy.
But there were a lot of those pitchers injured, and that's how the whole opener philosophy began, when some of those perfectly good starters were actually injured and unavailable. That's when, I don't know if Joe Maddon was still running the show then, but whoever was, you know, had the, what looked like a bright idea at the time to do the.
No, it wasn't Kevin Cash.
It's not a brilliant idea.
It was Kevin Cash.
Okay, Kevin
no,
Cash.
No, it's not.
But an opener belongs on your wallet to open beer bottles with. You know, it doesn't.
Exactly.
On your keychain.
Yeah, well, I think the opener may work if you had the right setup, like if you only had one spot and you need to fill in the rotation. But I don't know if it's a situation I would use all the time. See, the idea is you have somebody come from the bullpen pitching in your tube, and you have a guy who maybe pitched bulk of the innings for like three or four innings. That's what the Twins did on Saturday. The Twins, they had a pitcher pitch the first, a pitcher pitch the second, and then they had a guy named Travis Adams who had brought back up from minor leagues. He did not pitch the previous time he was with the club, but he pitched four innings on Saturday. But I want to also point out too that they were very shaky innings. I think Tampa Bay did eventually have like a 5-2 lead after the sixth inning or something like that. I don't know. I don't remember exactly, but I think it was 5-2, but the point being, I don't think doing the opener is necessary the most successful idea. You have to have a right setup to do it. Right now, the Twins, they are without three of their starting pitchers. Bailey Ober, Pablo Lopez, and Zebby Matthews. So those three pitchers are injured right now. And so, yeah, so the Twins, they're trying to figure this out. And so.
By the way, Troy,
to prove your point, not to belabor the point, but to prove your point, and Bob, you remember this. I know you remember this. Last year, when we would have three out of five games were openers last year, We would have two or three openers in a row, and it worked for maybe a week, and then it was just a colossal disaster. If you remember last year, Bob.
Was that 24?
That was last year.
Okay.
That was 24.
Yeah, and to mention, and to kind of back up Bobby's point, if you have to do it for multiple pitchers in your rotation, multiple spots, eventually it is going to wear down your bullpen. And plus you have the factor, like in the Twins case, a lot of times the starters don't go no more than five innings right now, with the exception of Joel Ryan. So, that's going to put even more wear and tear on, a bullpen.
Getting back to the subject of injured pitchers, like I think Don was referring to that a few minutes ago about pitchers were so injured to begin with. That's another problem in baseball. What's causing all of these injured pitchers? My goodness, every time you turn around, somebody's out for 6 months, or there's a Tommy John here, a Tommy John there.
It's the way they're throwing pitchers.
They're told to throw that way. Again, it's science. It's science.
It's science. When you throw a sweeper, all a sweeper is a glorified slider. Okay? A slider is a mediocre fastball that comes into the plate. You throw it down the middle, and at the last minute, it breaks to the outside corner. That's if you're a right-hand pitcher throwing to a right-hand batter. A sweeper, on the other hand, starts way inside. It'll break 2 feet outside. But to get more horizontal break, you got to put more spin on the ball. And to put more spin on the ball, you're putting more strain on your forearm, and you're putting more strain on your elbow, and you're putting more strain on your triceps. And that is how people are tearing UCLs, okay? And this is what Andrew Bailey, the pitching coach of the Red Sox, is being accused of. Too much spin. We have quality pitchers who are out, who may be out for the year. Justin Slayton was a great pickup from the Yankees. I know Brian Cashman is sorry they let him go. Okay? Garrett Whitlock.
I thought he was with Texas.
Oh, yeah, he was. I meant Garrett Whitlock.
Oh, yeah.
He is sorry he let Garrett Whitlock go. But Andrew Bailey ruined Garrett Whitlock last year. He had to have an internal brace, which is the step down from Tommy John surgery, but you're still out for a year. Okay? He had to have an internal brace put in. This year, Justin Slayton, he's injured. He had shoulder issues. Now he's got elbow issues because they are trying to get people to throw pitches that they can't throw. Okay, Liam Hendricks said he will not throw a sweeper. He said Lucas Giolito can throw a sweeper, but he can't throw a sweeper. But the Red Sox want him to throw a sweeper because it looks cool and there's a lot of swing and miss. Yeah, swing and miss.
Don't forget Tanner Houck.
Oh, yeah, Tanner Houck is another one. Okay, you are trying to get pitchers to be what they're not, okay? Burt Blyleven is not Nolan Ryan, okay? Joe Niekro is not Frank Tanana when he was in his heyday, okay? Bruce Hurst is not Roger Clemens. You're designed to throw a certain way. You are built to do a certain thing. You can't change what that person is capable of doing. Okay, if Bob Branco can bench press 500 pounds, but he can curl 200 pounds, I can't make him curl 500 pounds and bench 1,000 pounds because he's not built that way. But these nerds, they don't know the anatomy, maybe they don't know biology, I don't know what it is. All they know is science and numbers and physics. And this is what happens when you have scientists, physicists, and mathematicians running your front office. Okay? We're not running an insurance firm or an accounting firm. We're running a baseball team. Okay? Science does not belong in sports. It just doesn't.
And I don't know what can be done about it. I mean, MLB should do something about it, but like you told me several times, Bobby, the owners have the power to fire the commissioner if the commissioner starts seeing things this way, if the owners don't agree with them.
Exactly. Well, exactly. Because the owners are saving money because everything's done by a computer and you don't have to pay a computer.
You know, I actually think there may be a place for all that scientific stuff and the computer stuff, but I think what has happened in baseball is they're just taking it to another whole level. Like they basically use it to dictate how they operate as far as, you know, how they play on the field and stuff like that to like a whole new level. You know, the thing is, you know how a lot, you know, not, there's not as many like small ball, not as much a small ball anymore, like, you know, bunt runner over or go from first to third. Some teams still do that in the majors, but I think what has happened is these nerds that you're mentioning, Bobby, they have this idea that maybe launch angle trying to, you know, let's get the ball over the fence. Let's just give a big hit right away. You know, let's try to give runs to score as quickly as possible. But now what I think we're seeing, where we are actually are seeing a trend towards that small ball deal. But it's probably going to take a while before it's way more common than what we haven't seen. It's trending, but I don't think we're quite there yet to where I can say we're out of this mentality that we have to do, you know, the launch angle stuff and hitting the ball over the fence. And the reason why it's trending back towards a small ball, you know, make the runner go from first to third, you know, bunt the ball over and stuff like that. The reason why it's going back to that is because all the rule changes 2 years ago in the major leagues, you know, there's a limit now is how often you can throw to first base.
Yeah, exactly.
So yes, the trend has been let's hit that ball over the fence, launch angle, stuff like that. But now there is a trend of going back to we got to play with a small ball. Look at Cincinnati. They have a shortstop who can steal bases.
Nelly De La Cruz.
Yeah. Nelly.
If this were the 1980s and we had the players today back in the 1980s, Jared Duran would have 60 or 70 stolen bases. David Hamilton would have 60 stolen bases. Nelly De La Cruz would have 80 or 90 stolen bases.
Okay? Raffaello would have Alex about 50.
Cora says, we don't like to give up outs. That's why we don't like to steal. We don't like to give up outs. That is a weak, terrible argument. And going back to your point, Troy, about pulling pitchers and how Bob was saying, we don't want to see pitchers. We don't want them to face hitters the third time through. Everybody has their day. If you have a pitcher, I don't care if he's the worst pitcher in the game. If he happens to be pitching a great game that day, and it's in the fifth inning, and he's only thrown about 50 or 60 pitches, and he's given up two hits, and he hasn't given up a run, why do you got to pull him?
Because of his reputation? And if he's in line for the win, you don't need one more out to get, I guess. That's my thought. Why are you going to pull him?
Yeah, well.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you're thinking, he's going to be, you know, the general trend is the batting averages are higher when he faces a lineup through a third time.
But if the pitcher's on point though that day, just for that day, it doesn't have to be every other start. But if he's on with all of his pitches that he normally throws, why are you going to pull him?
Exactly.
Okay. Just ask Roger Clemens. Ask Clay Buchholz. Ask John Lester. Ask Hideo Nomo. Ask Nolan Ryan.
When they pitched no hitters,
they saw the lineup the third time through. It didn't matter.
Third, fourth, or fifth.
Look at the other day when Garrett Crochet went 8 1/3 innings against the Yankees. He saw the lineup a third time through. It didn't matter.
Because he had all his stuff working that day.
that day. Did I say it's going to be like that every time he pitches? No. But every now and then, Brooks Christie, who was the worst pitcher in baseball in 2021, beat the Philadelphia Phillies. He went 8 innings. He beat the Philadelphia Phillies because that day he happened to have everything working just right. And he was the worst pitcher in baseball, but he happened to have everything working just right. Did Aaron Boone pull him? No, he didn't.
Sure didn't.
Okay. But people like Alex Cora will pull you.
Because he knows a good thing when he sees one. That's why.
Exactly. Look what Alex Cora did last year to Cooper Criswell, who's pitching a perfect game against Detroit.
I remember that start. He was cruising.
And you remember what a juggernaut Detroit was last year. He was pitching a perfect game.
More like bad.
Oh my God.
But here's the thing though. Detroit in the second half got hot though. And they got the last wild card spot. And look at what they're doing now.
Yeah, they did.
They're even better this year than they were last year.
They got three all-stars in their starting lineup. Wilson, Baez, and Green are all in the starting lineup of the all-stars.
And did Terrence Skubal get the, all-star game?
I'm not sure. Do you know Bobby Skubal starting that game?
I haven't heard.
Nope, I'm not. I think Wilson you're thinking of, Bob. That's the rookie shortstop on Oakland.
Wilson.
I think you're thinking, who would you say? Javi Baez.
Green.
Yeah, cause I know there's a fur guy and I just can't think of him right now.
I can't either.
Is it Terrence Skubal?
He's
a position player, you're saying.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I thought there were three position players for Detroit.
Now, I don't know if Skubal's going to make the, all-star start for the American League in Atlanta or not. I don't know.
I don't know if Garrett Crochet, because I think Garrett Crochet has a better ERA than Terrence Skubal.
I don't know. I thought Skubal's ERA was like 2-something.
Crochet is in the low 2s right now. I know that.
I think Crochet's ERA
is ridiculous.
I think both of those starters are on averages are in the 2s.
Yeah, they are.
Both of them. I don't think it would matter who would start between Skubal. I know who the other
position player is on Detroit that's starting. Gleyber Torres.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, that's Torres. Right. It is
the second baseman. Yeah.
Yep. And
well, I mean, when you have a big fat lead in the American League, you can kind of do that. And you're running away and hiding from everybody by 12 games.
Yeah. Well,
something ridiculous.
I want to remind everybody the main reason why Detroit got into playoffs last year is because the Twins collapsed.
And so did the Royals. I mean, both those.
Teams, yeah, the Royals inside, did.
I mean, both of them had an inside track to wild card spots and all of a sudden they stumbled and bumbled down the stretch.
Even at the start of this season.
I know.
That was the strongest division in the American League.
Look, there's only one team that's probably going to make the postseason out of that, and that's the team that's leading the AL Central by over 12 games.
Last year
they had three teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, three.
Kansas City, Detroit, and Cleveland.
Cleveland, Kansas City, and Detroit.
And look at how bad both the Royals and Guardians have looked in 2025 compared to where they were in 24.
Are they at 500 or are they slightly above 500? The Royals.
Let me look. Hold on.
I don't think any other team in American League Central is over 500.
I don't think so either.
No, nobody else in American League Central is over 500.
The Royals are 500 right now as we speak.
Wow.
They're 43-48 as they head into game 92.
They're what?
Compared to where they were last year.
They had an upside. They were getting it together. That rotation last year was awesome. You had Lugo, it was there. You had Walker. You had Singer. By the way, that was a heck of a trade that between Cincinnati and Kansas City.
the Reds fleeced the Royals big time. I mean, the Reds fleeced Royals big time.
Oh yeah, they did.
I mean, the Reds got,
Yeah, it was. Think of Jonathan
and
India.
And what has India done since gone to Kansas City? Not squat.
Nothing.
The same the same thing he did at Cincinnati. Not Jack Diddley. Nothing.
Nothing.
I think he's barely batting above the Mendoza line. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, that is bad.
That's pretty bad when you can trade a good defensive infielder who doesn't have a bat for an arm that you could desperately use. Yeah. That's amazing.
Let me ask Ray if there is anybody with hands raised that would want to participate with us. Ray, are there any hands raised
at this current time, there are no other.
All right. Just let us know when that changes. We'll continue our conversation.
One thing
interests me, guys, I don't know if it interests any of you, Sunday coming, instead of watching the ESPN Sunday night game, assuming there is one.
There's not one next Sunday, Don.
I'm not one because I think the last game is like 3:10.
Okay.
So when it gets to the last game of the All-Star break, they normally don't do a Sunday
night. They don't have a Sunday night game.
Okay, well, they normally don't.
Luther, you probably know where I'm going. Yeah. I'm going to be watching the draft. The baseball draft.
I forgot that was coming up this weekend. I think that's coming up, what, Monday?
Sunday. Beginning.
Yes.
And 5 o'clock. Monday and then Tuesday. I don't know the time.
I think it's 5 o'clock. I think
I know some names that are going to be drafted for sure.
Oh yeah. Doyle's one of them.
Doyle from Tennessee.
Arkansas.
There's a kid from LSU.
Probably either Anderson or probably Steven Milan, who could be a couple of options as well.
Anderson is the pitcher from LSU. Yes, I was blanking on him.
You might see Steven Milan as well. Because there's going to be somebody looking for a very talented middle infielder, and he's pretty good at it.
And Jackson Holliday's kid brother, Ethan.
Yeah.
They're looking at him as a first, maybe number one draft choice, maybe above all the college pitchers.
I don't know about that, but.
Yeah, that's the talk.
I mean, that's the talk, but keep in mind, just because it's the talk doesn't mean it's going to be accurate.
Exactly. If it's me, if I'm running a team, I'm grabbing.
I need a pitcher.
Doyle, Wood, or Anderson, one of those
depending on where you are in the draft as well.
Exactly.
I don't think they base the draft on like how awful you finished, you know, in the regular season.
They used to entirely do it that way, but.
Well, now I don't think they do that. I think they changed it to like, I can't remember exactly what they base it on, but I do remember they changed it.
I don't see why they changed it. The White Sox, you know, were worse last year.
The White Sox would have definitely been picking first. They would have kept it the way it was, and whoever was second worst, and on and on and on.
Yeah, well, I think the reason why they changed it is because they don't want teams to just simply tank so they can get the first round pick.
Exactly.
You know, a first overall pick.
Mm-hmm. So I know the Nationals get the first shot this time, and
the Nationals suck so bad that they would automatically get the first pick if they were sucking so bad. I think I heard something yesterday that they're going to be changing their GM and manager. I think at the end of this season.
Yes, I heard that too, Dave.
I don't know if you guys heard the new CBA. Teams like Oakland aren't allowed, or whatever they call themselves, Raiders or Sacramento A's or whatever
they are called right now is just FLS, but I'd like to refer to them as the Vagabonds until they get a permit.
Yeah, but they're not allowed to do what they've been doing for the last couple of years, is just cheaping out. You can only do that for 3 years. And then if you're deliberately tanking after three years, you lose draft picks. And MLB did that. They did that deliberately because if you remember what the Baltimore Orioles did after 16, They lost 100 games, something like 4 years in a row. And yeah. MLB is like, you can't do that to your fan base.
Well, here's
okay,
the problem.
People are paying too.
Well, for one, they're paying too much. For one, you're paying for parking, you're paying for tickets, you're paying for beverages, you're paying for souvenirs. That's going to come up to about $200, especially if you're taking a family of four out to the ball game.
Oh yeah. That's $500-$600 right there.
At least for parking, for tickets, for sodas, you know, concessions, for souvenirs. I mean, that adds up. And I don't think you want to go to a ball game to see a sucky baseball team. It's unconscionable.
Yeah, there's a reason A's never drew while they were in Oakland. There's a reason. Because yep. That team was dreadful those last few years under John Fisher.
And the dump heap they were playing in. Let's keep that in mind.
Yeah, that too.
My God. A family of possums up in the radio booth. Now that is beyond beyond.
Yeah. And how would you like to have, your toilets, overflowing?
Or my personal, no, that wasn't in the home booth. That was in the visitors television booth from what I heard. It was in the visitors TV booth with that.
Well, it's not as bad as 86. It's not as bad as 86. I remember Oil Cam Boyd saying that, Fenway Park locker rooms were so bad. A rat ran across the locker room on the floor.
I remember a story. I think a broadcast was trying to plug up their stuff and a poor rat somehow got stuck in the wiring and ended up being electrocuted.
I believe it.
Where was this at?
Oh yeah,
I think it was.
No. These owners are too cheap. No. They are just too cheap.
No, I think it was some. I think it was like a minor league. I can't remember who it was, but somebody told the story. I think it was one of the broadcasters for the minor league or major league level. While the national anthem was going on, they were having a hard time getting their equipment put, you know, plugged in. And all of a sudden, a poor rat got stuck in the wiring, and they tried to plug up their mixer and their stuff, and all of a sudden, the poor rat got electrocuted.
That can happen, I guess, but there is a story that in 75, when Fisk hit his mighty home run, one of the cameramen got the shot because he was trying to dodge a rat in Fenway Park. So,
Fenway Park was a disaster back then.
And that became an iconic shot picture of Carlton Fisk.
You may remember this. Who was the guy that hit the home run at the All-Star game and hit off the transformer, the top of the roof?
Reginald Martinez Jackson.
Yes.
That was 1971.
And on my program, on my Baseball Lifer podcast, I'm going to do an episode called The All-Star Game That Was. And one of the home runs you'll hear is that one that Reggie
and
hit.
Now, I don't know who was doing the radio side, but I think the late Kirk Gowdy was doing the TV side, I think.
Yeah, he did TV. Radio was Jim Simpson and Sandy Koufax.
Of course, they were an
unusual team.
Now,
Jim Simpson,
he did a lot of college basketball too.
Yes, he did.
TV,
that's right.
The NCAA.
My point about him, he was the best announcer who didn't like baseball. He was a terrific announcer doing it, but he did not like the game.
Keith Jackson was the same way. He did well with baseball, but with him having to do college football and for a year or two doing men's college basketball, yes, there is some Keith Jackson doing some men's college basketball.
And boxing. And he did a bunch of everything.
Howard Cosell was one of them.
Yeah.
Howard Cosell was part of the ABC Monday Night crew.
He wasn't the actual analyst, but he was like the third member, like the annual stat nerd that would give you.
Wasn't he with Keith Jackson?
Yes, he was.
Doing ABC Monday Night Baseball?
Right.
Yeah. It was Al Michaels, Keith Jackson, and Howard Cosell.
Well, right. No, there was somebody else working with Keith because Al Michaels, I think, moved on to do football. Because I can't remember.
He started off doing baseball.
Yeah.
My point about Jim Simpson and Sandy Koufax. I told you about Simpson. He didn't like the game, but he was great at it. Sandy Koufax did not like the microphone, but he was a good analyst, but he just didn't like talking into the mic. And after about 5 years, he just said, the heck with this. I am out of here. And he never broadcast a game after 1971.
And you know the darndest thing, though? Jim Simpson was very a lot of folks didn't like Jim Simpson for his time, for his calls, but he was very underrated. And I think Herb Score, who used to work with Mike Keegan and Tom Hamilton on the radio side.
Yes.
Which okay. I didn't, with the Indians, which I didn't even know that was him.
Yeah.
I swear, I didn't even know Herb Score. I'm like, wait, what?
What a Brooklyn accent he had.
Mike Keegan, Herb Score, Tom Hamilton, and Matt Underwood was the four-man broadcast team with the Indians and when they were the Indians at the time, and they were in the 90s.
I've got a few Herb Score games in my collection that he broadcast, and he's something with that Brooklyn accent. Another all-star highlight on the all-star game that was on my podcast comes from, we talked about 1971, but 30 mm-hmm. years later, earlier, I mean, in 1941 was the first time an all-star game ended on a home run, and it was hit by Ted Williams, and I'm going to present that as it was broadcast by Ty Tyson, the Detroit broadcaster. And if I can find it, I'm going to add in Red Barber's version of that same play. I'm not 100% sure that I still have it. I know I used to, but that was when there could be multiple broadcasts of an all-star game or a World Series. And Ty Tyson was allowed to do it on WWJ 1 year before they became WJR. Red Barber did it around the country on NBC.
And if I'm correct, I know we're running out of time on this, but if I'm not mistaken, Ernie Harwell, I think, was still doing, Ernie Harwell was like the last guy that got traded for a player when the Atlanta Crackers were still around.
I think he's the only announcer.
I think he is, in fact,
to ever be traded for a player. Brooklyn was desperate. Red Barber had a bleeding ulcer, and they absolutely had to have a broadcaster.
They had to get a guy.
Even if he wasn't any good. Yep. And doggone if they didn't get Ernie Harwell, who was absolutely fantastic.
Ernie
Harwell was great.
Then we went back to the Tigers. Yeah. Along with the late, great Jim Price that worked with him for a long time.
The old catcher. Yeah.
Catcher for the Tigers.
Yes.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Price did a couple of innings of some play by play. I think he got the third, fourth, and the seventh. And Frank Beckman was working with Tiger Broadcast Team 2 at the time, who was the longtime voice of Michigan. Yes.
I didn't know where he came from. He took over for the late
Rob Frost, who passed away in 1980 or 81 due to cancer, and the surgery for that was unsuccessful. So he passed away from that.
Yeah, I think Price caught the Tigers.
I think he did.
Was it the Tigers or the Senators?
He was a backup catcher for Bill Freehan.
Okay, Detroit. Yes, absolutely.
Bill Freehan.
He had Jim Price, all right.
Yeah. Bill Freehan, what a good catcher he was.
Oh, Bill Freehan. Just some of the names that you guys are talking about, which I didn't get a chance to actually, you know, hear back in the day. I probably could find them if I wanted to go on the YouTube. I could probably find a few of the broadcasts. But there's nothing like hearing the late Ernie Harwell, the late, you know, with Frank Beckman, who retired from Michigan football, Rob Frost. I mean, you can go back and find some of the broadcasts. Some of them are pretty interesting. A night and day comparison to how the broadcasts sound now compared to what they did then with the phone.
I'll tell you what, Luther, it was great hearing John Mueller when they had that. When they had that switcheroo and the Red Sox played the Dodgers.
You know what?
San Francisco.
Yeah.
Miller, was it San Francisco, Bobby, or LA Dodgers?
It was San Francisco. Yeah. When John Mueller came over and Will and his brother. Dave Fleming.
Yep. Right, exactly. And I remember Miller when he was a Red Sox announcer back in 1980,
81,
82.
Yeah.
He sounds the same.
This is before Castiglione got here.
Yes.
Yep.
This is before Castiglione got here.
Correct.
He was working with
Cleveland, I think, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. John Miller was working with Ned Martin because Ken Coleman hadn't come on yet.
He was working with Ned Martin. Before we run out of time here, John Miller was working with the late Chuck Thompson of the Baltimore Orioles. I think that's where he cut his teeth in MLB because he was working with the late Chuck Thompson on the radio side.
No, he was with Oakland first. Then the Rangers, then Boston, then Baltimore. Then he went to Baltimore, and then he went to San Fran.
Miller worked with Coleman. Miller did work with Coleman from 80 to 82.
And I'm trying to think, he did.
Coleman came back from the Reds in 79.
He was here from 79 to 80. So did Brenneman, 87. So did Brenneman take
over? It was 88.
Yeah, Martin was on TV.
Oh, okay. So Brenneman was still.
Yeah, that's right. Martin went to TV 38, not to Nesson, I'm sorry. He went to Nesson because Sean McDonough came to TV 38 in 88.
And then I think Sean McDonough took over his full-time TV. Wasn't it like 90 something?
He did.
You guys
he took over full-time TV after 88 because of, after 88, I don't think TV 38 was carrying the games anymore. It was all Nesson.
Yeah, I think Nesson, and then there's like, what is it? MASN in Baltimore that carries the Orioles, and Gary Thorne sadly is no longer doing the Orioles on TV.
I hate to say it, but we are out of time. We are out of time, folks. It was a great show. Thank you, Don and Luther and Bobby and Troy. Thanks for filling in. We appreciate it.
Sure. Anytime.
And thank you, Ray, for being our facilitator for today's show. And we'll talk next week. Go safe with God's abundant blessings, everybody. Take care.